This is exactly right.
On the 12th season of Tenfold More Wicked, we investigate a series of compelling mysteries from the city of Fall River, Massachusetts, where problems started generations before Lizzie Borden's murders made her a household name. Join me as we cover the misfortunes that have befallen this infamous town for more than 150 years, including the Great Fire of 1843. Season 12 is out now on Exactly Right. New episodes on Mondays. Follow Tenfold More Wicked on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Babs Gray, and I don't know about you ladies, but I'm so ready for hot dog summer.
I'm Brandi Posey, and it's funny how there are no comedian destroys relationship videos.
I'm Tess Barker, and I have two settings. Number one, I'm cold. Number two, I have to pee.
And this is Lady to Lady.
Can you keep a secret?
Neither can we.
We got Barbara, Brandi, and of course, Big Tess. We got a show for everyone that's the fucking best. Come on, baby. It's time to hang out with your favorite ladies. Lady to Lady, Lady to Lady.
Yay! Welcome to the show, everyone.
Woo woo! Just a couple of quick plugs before we get into things. June 3rd in Portland, Oregon, I am recording my next album at the Clinton Street Theater.
Yay!
It's real funny. I feel real good about it. Kickstandcomedy.com or my website or Lady to Lady's website will have the info for tickets. Please come to that. If you live anywhere in the area whatsoever, it's a 200-seat theater. I would really love to pack it out. Bring all your friends. I'm going to have great openers. Be there for... His herstory in the making?
That's the name of the album, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And I've got a few plugs. I've got one for my blow dryer. I'm sorry.
One for your butt? We're so mature.
We are very mature, funny
women.
We're
professional comedians. With
Speaking of,
we are, because you know what? We're talking to
a legend.
Did
you see that?
Yeah. We are talking to a legend today. We've been so excited ever since we knew this guest was going to be coming on the show.
I've been telling strangers about this. I'll be like getting my dry cleaning. I'm like, in a week, I'm recording with. Should we say it now?
Say it.
Oh my God, she's had a million specials and written books, and she's just amazing. We have Paula Poundstone on the show today, you guys.
Woo! Ooh,
such a treat. Enjoy. Does each cat is like the? Do they have a look or a collar or something that reminds you of the subscription service that they are unlocking?
They're all named after.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on.
This is Theo.
Netflix 247.
I was about to say, AKA Netflix. Yeah. And then honestly, I don't have Netflix. I don't have any TV that you have to pay for.
You're not wrong.
I watch, if I'm on the, you know, if I'm in a hotel, I watch cable, but at home, I've never had cable.
Yeah, it hits better in a hotel anyway.
Yeah.
At home, I don't really have time mostly to sit down and watch a TV show. But don't get me wrong. I have DVDs and videos. But then, I do it on my own.
That's intentional.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with no commercials, it's funny. Every now and then I'll be on the road and I'll be flipping use the clicker. Mm-hmm. And I'll come across a movie that I like. And I'll stop and watch it. And as I'm living through endless commercials, I think to myself, why am I watching something? It's literally taking all day.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It is.
Yeah, they take a 90-minute movie and turn it into 3 hours.
Honestly. Yeah. And I have it at home on perhaps even LaserDisc.
Yeah. Well, we were wondering who's still doing the LaserDisc.
Paula Poundstone, everybody.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have like five VCRs
no.
backups.
No.
Yeah,
no.
Because
if one breaks, you can't find them anymore.
Because Right, exactly. Right? Because they're going to be, you're not going to be able to get them. And so I'm on a constant VCR search.
You still have
There's definitely that. Like a videotape. I don't want to say resurgence, but there's a store down the street by me where you can mm-hmm. buy them. There's a new one opening up next to them soon. Mm-hmm. So there is some pockets. We've got some pockets.
There. Absolutely. See, I like that.
What about, do you have the rewinder machine, just the a la carte rewinder?
I do, although mine, the one that I think I do, okay, yes. Good.
I because about
that
those.
Saves the, yeah. I'm told that saves like the little engine or whatever yeah. it is in the VCR. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing I like to do, you know, on a, like a cold, rainy day where you're inside, is just to rewind the tape by hand.
Yeah. I mean, look, some people.
It's a workout, a wrist, yeah. you know, you get your wrists going.
Some people neglect their thumb muscle a lot.
Yeah, yeah, it's the same as crocheting, I think. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, exactly. Mo, come here. My dog is whining at the door. Oh, come here.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have two big dogs. Here, I'll show you.
Please.
Okay, this is Sirius.
Hi, Sirius.
And, Sirius.
He's part German Shepherd and part bear.
Big baby.
And Mo, come here. Mo. Okay. That's Mo.
Mo's not a podcast fan.
Oh my God, what a beauty.
Yeah, Mo's gorgeous.
Isn't she?
Yeah.
And she's not nice.
That's classic.
She looks like the sweetest dog in the world, yeah. but she's not nice.
She can afford to be. When you're that pretty, yeah. you can just be a bitch, you know?
I have a not nice yeah. dog too, so I, solidarity.
Isn't it weird?
Yeah.
Because people, when I'm walking her, people will be like, oh, can I pet your dog? Or they'll even start to pet her without asking
yeah.
because she's part golden retriever, but she's also part Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. But she just looks like a big golden retriever. And people are like, was a golden retriever? Of course you pet him.
Yeah.
And she'll be like, she's not friendly at all.
I know. I used to, during at the when everything was starting to open back up, I ran an open mic in my backyard for a minute because I was, you know, just kind of getting back into things. And I called it the don't pet the dog open mic because my dog would be running around the yard and be like, don't pet him.
You got to put in the title.
My dogs are like,
not nice.
They're so nice that I kind of have to like tell people, like people take it personally, like, oh, they love me. I'm like, well,
they love everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you take any good feeling that a person could get from the exchange of petting yeah. your dog, any positive lift. You strip it away yeah, from them. I yeah. see.
Not special. See? Not special.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Because you know what? Don't mollycoddle them. You got it. People have to be prepared to face the real world.
Yes.
And in the, you know, in the real world, dogs don't like you.
Yeah. Or at the very least, they're indiscriminate whores who like everyone.
Yeah.
Like everyone.
Like everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. Paula, I love your Ricky and Lucy behind you.
Oh, thank you. It's a bench.
Really?
Oh, cool.
It's a life-size.
Yeah, I'll show you.
It's a life-size Ricky and Lucy. Oh, my God. That is so great.
I love it because
it feels
like
nice?
They're like whispering in both of your ears a little bit.
Yes.
And there might see, they start out nice and then they fight. So.
Were you, Ricky did you watch also. A lot of I Love Lucy when you were a kid?
I love really? Lucy.
Yeah.
Yes. When I was the youngest in my family, and my mother would get the other kids off to school before I was in school. She would get the other kids off to school, and then she would go back to bed. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of left to, you know, it's not like the Bronx. It's not like I was wandering around, you know, some big city. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was left to sort of figure it out for myself.
Yeah.
but one of the things that I did gravitate to, of course, was the black and white, three-station television in the basement. Mm-hmm. And I Love Lucy was syndicated, and it was on in the morning. And so were the Three Stooges. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I was babysat by by the Three Stooges and I Love Lucy. And there were children's shows on, but I didn't care for them.
Yeah.
I was as disappointed as the next person when Miss Jean from Romper Room didn't say my name when she looked through the magic mirror. But
yes,
I don't know. A lot of the Romper Room stuff just did nothing for me.
Well, I think that's the thing about Lucy. So, I showed my nieces Lucy a few months ago, and they thought it was funny. And so we're
it's evergreen.
Like, it's kind of like the first sitcom, and they just got it right, and we never were able to replicate it. It's kind of, it appeals to all ages. It's timeless. Like, it's just so solid.
Yeah, no, it's great. It started out as a radio show, actually. Oh. Ironically, in New York, and then they moved it out to Los Angeles, which is the opposite of the I Love Lucy story, which is that they were, you know, in New York. Yeah. And
well, and she didn't want to do it because TV was kind of a risky thing, and she had a good thing going with the radio show. Like, it was a super popular radio show.
Yeah, it's a great there's the guy Jess Oppenheimer was one of the originally one of the writers, and then went on to, I think, I don't know, be one of the big wigs on it. He wrote an autobiography that you know, it's not like you're, you know, reading about Napoleon or Ben Franklin or something. It's a fairly thin volume, but
he would like you to think it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, it's I Love Lucy strategy, but yeah, it was fun to, it was a fun read.
Was Lucy and the Stooges formative for you? Would you consider, I think you're a pretty physical comedian. Like, when I think about you, do you think about yourself that way?
No.
Okay.
No. There's that one thing that I usually do with the person in the front row where I run a saw over their head. And that may have been influenced by the Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm. I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah. 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 I've run into some legal trouble with that bit, by the way.
Oh, really?
Shocking.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I showed my kids the Three Stooges, and you know, and I did make the little speech before I showed it to them. I said, you know, you can't hit someone with a hammer. You can't run a saw over their head. And, you know, and they were disappointed. But the biggest speech that I made before I showed a television show was before I showed them Leave It to Beaver. Because Leave It to Beaver is one of the funniest sitcoms ever made. It's the earlier episodes that are the really great ones, like many shows. Mm-hmm. And it was about, it's the name of the show was misleading. It really wasn't a show about Beaver.
No.
It was a show, originally anyways, it was a show about Ward, who was the father, Ward's struggle to parent. Mm. And in fact, in the early days of the show, he started out with a little monologue and ended up with a little like epilogue speech. Mm. And I don't think most people know that or see it from that perspective. But anyways, when I showed them that show, which I have on video, I said, okay, before you watch this, you have to understand something. No one has a happy family. And
yeah.
You know, that's what families are. It's getting up every day and struggling to cope with one another. That's what families are. No one vacuums in their pearls.
No.
And no one solves a problem in 22 minutes.
Right.
Yes. That's kind of a comforting thing about growing up, is you do realize you're like, oh, every family is a mess. There's just...
You know what? I didn't know that. And I really resented it. When I found out, I really resented it that no one let me know that.
Yeah.
Right. Tells you that, because everyone's trying to act perfect.
And a lot of our, you know, our struggles were not things that we told other people.
Right. Right.
And I don't know, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. I don't know. But I, you know, I just thought it was just us. And then, you know, I was probably, you know, 17 years old before. And now even, there are days where, you know, even if I'm social, even if I'm out with other people, I may be the most sane person in the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
it's always a moment to realize.
It didn't seem possible when I was younger. I mean, I was just absolutely without, you know, you didn't even have to, I didn't even have to find the, it didn't matter what individuals I was in the room with. Mm-hmm. I was always easily the nuttiest person in the room, as far as I knew.
Right,
right, right.
As far as you know.
Everyone else was just hiding theirs, mm-hmm. which is...
Yeah, and then it turns out, you know, you talk to anybody for more than a few minutes and you find out they're mad as a hatter.
Yeah, this is a circus made entirely of clowns on this planet.
Yeah, we're all mad here.
Yeah.
It's kind of true, and that's the good news and the bad news. But, right. you know, it's when they're like, oh, you know, mental health shouldn't be... You know, mental health problems should be stigmatized. No, they absolutely shouldn't be stigmatized, because who's fooling who? That's like saying, you know, my feet are ugly. Yeah, everybody's feet are ugly.
Yeah.
it's not an attractive appendage. It just isn't. That's why you put shoes on.
This is making me want to see if you have a wiki feet, Paula. Oh, hold God. On.
Right. What are wiki feet? Already. Googling
it. We've talked about it a lot on the show. A lot of female comedians have been placed on this website where somebody finds every photo available of your bare feet.
Oh, no one's ever had a photo of my bare feet.
Bless you. Yeah. Well, there you go.
No search results. Paula Poundstone, the only female comedian on WikiFeet. Congratulations. Yeah.
That's just weird that people would have such a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, yeah.
Yeah, everyone's mad.
Everyone's mad in good and bad ways.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's, you know, I mean, I do think I also went through a phase as a, you know, sort of as a performer. Mm-hmm. And you know, this is like an embarrassing thing to admit, but so be it, where I somehow thought that I just sought out my own personal drama like a heat-seeking missile because I had this idea that it somehow added to my, you know, my performerhood somehow, you know, that if I was deeply troubled, that, you know, my art would somehow flourish, which is such crap. Yeah. And I don't know who started that stupid idea, but, you know, I must have seen some movie or something that told me that.
I feel like it's such a thing that we're, that I thought too. I like my 20s. I was like, oh, I'm just going to do all this stupid stuff just to talk about it on stage. Yeah. And I'm like, so messed up. And this is who I am, because that's what comics are, because we tell the truth. And it's like, all right,
such a load of crap.
Yeah. You don't need to seek it
really
out. It's going to
like
seek you
old,
out.
Yeah, life will find
like
a way.
Like an old wives' tale about our business, you know, about performers or quote unquote artists. It's just like an old wives' tale. Mm-hmm. And I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. I remember this is before. When I was 17, I was a senior in high school, and I went away to a school for fucked up kids. And it was like a residential therapeutic program. And, you know, basically it was a holding bin for people, for kids who they didn't quite know what to do with. And I remember one day there was somebody that was visiting. I lived in a house of 16 kids, and you know, there was lots of group activities, and a lot of group therapy, and I remember one day though there was some sort of professional that was visiting, and I happened to be sitting near them, and I think they were trying to engage me in, you know, reflective conversation or something, and I blurted out to this person that it's true. I had read a lot of Judy Garland biographies, I'd gone through a very solid Judy Garland phase in my reading, and I said to this person, I go, I want to be like Judy Garland, and she looked at me like I had two heads, and she goes, well, that's kind of a strange, like, it's kind of a strange goal. And it's true, like, after reading these books about her struggle, but I think that's partly where I got this idea.
Okay.
You know, that, like, because one of the things that Judy Garland would do, and by the way, one of the things I might have been able to recognize by reading her biographies, was that our lives were not similar in any way.
Yeah.
But I didn't recognize that. I thought I was like her, except for I didn't have a powerful historic singing voice. I didn't start on stage when I was two. I did, you know. But other than that, we were like neck and neck. She was my chief competitor.
Yeah, right there. Peers. Yes.
But I do think that's part of where, because, okay, so one of the things she would do is like when she had a television show at one point, and they did all this stuff to try to accommodate her, whether it did or not, I'm not certain. But like one of the things was they had this yellow brick road painted up to her trailer. Mm. I mean, whether Judy Garland really required that, wanted that, if that cheered her up, I have no idea. But they did stuff like that, you know, deferring to her. And she would go into her trailer and then not come out when it was time to shoot the show. I don't know how many times it happened, but I had read about it in these biographies that I read of her. And so I was just so excited at the prospect of being able to, I never even had a trailer, but I was just so excited about the prospect of having people want me to come out and me not coming out.
That's power. Yeah,
that was what I desired.
Yes. That's a move. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't, you know, I did get over it at a certain point. I forget when. It took a while. But I really did, like, more than, you know, I'm sure you guys do the same, which is there's a Roomba in my head, I think, that is just constantly trying to vacuum up shit I could use on stage.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right? Like constantly. And I've been doing this job for 43 years. And so I don't even think about the Roomba in my head anymore. It's just there. It's just a natural, you know, it's the same as opening a soda, you know, it's just there.
Yeah.
And, but there was, so I'm not a person that often sits down in a chair and writes, for like jokes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Sat down in a chair and written books. I've sat down in a chair and written other things, but I just, you know, that's not how I come up with my act for the most part. So much more than quote unquote writing, I focused on this idea of not coming out of the trailer. Somewhere along the way, I figured out that maybe that wasn't where the heart of the work lies.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever barricaded yourself in a green room though? Because you've been in many a green room. Which is the
I have been in many a green room. Most green rooms you really don't want to stay in.
That's true.
Her trailer really nice.
That's fair. You're like, do I want to stay back here and smell chicken fingers, or do I want to perform?
Right. Yeah. Do you want to sit on a couch that Ollie Joe Prater vomited on? No, not really.
I'll pace. No. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, when I worked clubs, which is 1,000 years ago, but when I worked clubs, somebody's crying. Oh, it's Theo. Yeah, when I worked clubs, the most badly behaved performers, by the way, were often the ones that the club owners talked about, and they would talk about them like as if, you know. Let me just give you one example. So there's a guy that used to book some stuff in the middle of the country, and he would drive me. You know, he would book me in one club. And then he would drive me to a one-nighter somewhere outside of there, right? A lot of long hours. And not a person that I would seek out in any other capacity. I mean, he was okay, but we weren't like huge
buddies. We interact with a lot of people who you're like, oh, you're in my life because of comedy.
It's a mild hostage situation, but a willing hostage.
Well, it's a coworker, but you're stuck in, you know, like everybody has, most people have coworkers, but you're stuck in a tight, you know, the coworkers driving.
Buddy comedy.
It's like when you're in the, you were in the junior high and your mother drove you everywhere, you know.
Yes.
It was, it could get awkward. But anyways, this guy would tell me about, there was a comic named Ollie Joe Prater, who he told me stories of, he'd say, and I don't think I'd ever even met the guy when he first, I don't think I'd ever met Ollie Joe Prater when this guy first started telling me about him. But he would say, like, oh, we just had Ollie Joe last week. You know, he was watching. It was a two show Friday night or something. He watched Johnny Carson's monologue. And then he walked out on stage and did jokes from Johnny Carson's monologue. And I'm like, well, that's awful. Yeah.
Wow.
You know? And then he's like, yeah, it's awful. The guy just, you know, he's a thief. He steals stuff. And that was so blatant. It's awful.
Yeah.
And goes, yeah. And in the, because they used to make you stay in these god awful apartments that all the comics stayed in each week.
No windows.
And he goes, yeah.
Yeah.
and he goes, yeah. And he threw up behind the couch and, you know, he fucked like two waitresses that, you know, now have like some sort of disease. And I'm like, oh my God, that's awful.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, yeah. I'm having him back next week.
Yeah.
He's a rock star, you know?
Yeah. Like no one's bad behavior ever seemed. It's sort of like Trump lovers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like nobody's bad behavior ever seemed to put them, you know, cut into their business. Or, you know, like, yeah, he's horrible.
Yeah, because the guys thought he was cool for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, they're like, man, that guy's a tortured artist.
Yeah, there was a weird, well, I think it may have been the, you know, like, oh, he's such a great performer. Yeah.
Right.
You know, he's got all these weird behaviors,
mm-hmm.
But you see, that maybe just added mm-hmm. to my Judy Garland thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, maybe that probably him telling me that story gave me another year of odd focus.
I mean,
somewhere along the way, I did figure it out, but I would say that it was, you know, it was later than one might have hoped.
No, that's fair. That's fair. That's fair. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of comedy condos that have made me want a trailer that I would never leave either, for sure.
Oh, is it disgusting? I stayed in one time in Raleigh, North Carolina. What was it? Charlie Goodnight's mm-hmm. Raleigh, North Carolina. And I swear to you, I am not making this up. The number 8 on the phone didn't work. And there were no such thing as cell phones back then. So then, you know, it was a phone on a wall in the kitchen of this apartment they made you stay in. And the number 8 on the phone didn't work. And so we couldn't order pizza because there was an 8 in the pizza number. And it was like something out of a Steve Wright joke. He used to do a joke about a phone that had like one number that didn't work. But it was in real life. And, you know, you'd tell the guy who ran the club, like, yeah, I can't, you know. I have no, because you're not near anything. You're not, it's not like you're staying in a downtown area. You're staying out of, yeah, I have no way. I can't get food. Yeah. Yeah, that phone's been broken for a while. Yeah. Yeah. You might want to do something about that before Ollie Joe gets in.
He's probably the reason the phone didn't work.
Yeah.
He threw up on it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so any of those common rooms, like a green room, yeah, you wouldn't, you want it to really get out of as quickly as you could.
They're not cleaning surfaces. No.
No, not really.
Well, we're going to take a quick break out of our green room. That didn't work. Yeah. And we'll be right back, everybody.
It's Lady to Lady, and we're back with Paula Poundstone.
Sorry, I talk a lot.
No, you're phenomenal. This is great.
You're great. You're amazing.
It's a big problem. I'll tell you something.
It's not like you make a living doing it. So.
Whoa! I'm not supposed to be the last one in the room at a show. But a lot of the people just can't stay as long as I talk. That's what I'm finding. One of the things I've started doing at my shows is selling postcards so that at about 2 hours of me being on stage, as the audience gets homesick, they can just take out a postcard.
Write a Civil War letter to their loved ones.
Right, exactly. Jot a little something to those at home.
Like, I don't know when I will. When I shall return, but yeah. I will.
missing you, thinking of you.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're gonna play a game to get to know you a little better. And
we're playing a game.
Yes, we are.
What do you mean get to know me a little better?
Yes.
I've already told you that I idolized Judy Garland when I was very young, and that I went to a school for fucked up kids.
Did they do the thing where they kidnapped you and brought you to the school? Because I know people who've done that.
Yeah.
Not exactly. No, they didn't. But I just getting a soda out of the old fridge.
No, get it.
I was a little bit tricked to go, to be honest. But I hate it when people say "to be honest," because don't you?
Yeah.
Because it indicates that's somehow the
right.
Right, the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. But anyways, I was a little bit tricked to.
Yeah, because I've had friends who went to similar places and they were like in the middle of the night, like someone showed up and took them. And
oh, yeah. What do they used to call it? A knock. My son used to call it something, a knock, and I forget.
Yes.
But I wasn't kidnapped, but I was tricked. But in the end, I was glad that I was there. Some of my best friends to this day I know as a result of having been there. Yeah,
that's great.
So in that way, and it was very unique.
Yeah,
you know, you were, you almost couldn't explain it to anybody outside of there because it was just so. It was just so different than regular life.
I was going to say, it makes sense because they're putting all the kids who they don't know what to do with in one place. Of course, they're going
to
find
awesome.
Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many of those kids became stand-up comics? Because I feel like that's a very similar beginning. A bunch of kids.
No, again, that's just what we think.
No, I know. I'm kidding.
The truth is, you know, when people talk about, you know, the tears of the clown. And
right.
I used to draw pictures of clowns crying. I was so dramatic when I was young.
Of course.
That's how I saw myself. Mm-hmm. Because between Judy Garland and maybe Red Skelton or something, that idea was put in my head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's ridiculous. If you want to find unhappy people, right, you know, like with tears of a clown, fuck that. What about the tears of a meat packer?
Yeah.
There's... You know, many more, you know,
yes.
The thing about comedy mm-hmm. is that it's uplifting.
Yeah.
You know, we get, you know, people will say to me like, somebody will say, well, I don't like, I don't know. They'll go, oh, do you like, you know, like, oh, do you, I really like comedy. Well, of course you like comedy. Everybody likes, that's ridiculous. It's like saying I like music. Yeah, everybody likes music. You may like one particular kind, but what kind of a fool wouldn't like this thing that gives you a happy chemical release in your brain? It's the best. It's good. It's good for you.
Yeah.
When I was in the school for fucked up kids, I had just gotten turned on to Bob and Ray, the old radio team, mm-hmm. before I arrived there. They were... I think they were making, they had taken some of their scripts and put it into a book called Write If You Get Work, I think it was. And I had heard them. I mean, they were really like my father's age entertainers, but they had this resurgence when I was in high school. And so I had heard them on maybe The Tonight Show or something. Mm-hmm. And so I knew the cadence of their voices. I didn't know all their routines, but I knew the cadence of their voice. So I had this book with me when I went to the school for fucked up kids. And one of the things that I used to do at night, I was in a room with like six girls, I think. And I would read aloud to them from this Bob and Ray book. And I would read it in the same cadence
right.
as how Bob and Ray had. Well, they thought I was a genius, but I was just copying Bob and Ray. But it was just so, and it may be that was as healing and helpful as anything else that ever took place in that place. More likely.
Yeah.
Just how hard we laughed. It was great.
Did you have a conscious feeling like when you were doing that? Like, oh shit, this is awesome. Making people laugh. Like, I want to do this.
I always gravitate. The first sentence of the last paragraph in a summary letter written by my kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Bump, in May of 1965, says, I have enjoyed many of Paul's humorous comments about our activities.
Kindergarten.
I always gravitated to that. You know, I became, I found Mrs. Bump, or she found me or something. I don't know, maybe 30 years ago. And, you know, we had a couple of exchanges. I talked to her on the phone one time and she came to see me one time in New Hampshire. And then I, you know, lost track of her again. And I assumed she had probably died. And I got an email from her literally like a couple months ago. And the subject line was, I'm still alive.
Oh, Mrs. Bump.
That's amazing.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
Mrs. Bump
and she's
forever.
Like, she's 90 something and she lives with her daughter and in Vermont, I think. Yeah.
I love her.
Wow. Yeah. She was a terrific kindergarten teacher. First of all, to have, it was, I think, impactful to have an adult recognize something that they sincerely seem to enjoy about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that alone was probably pretty formative. I mean, my first grade teacher said my handwriting wasn't good and I cried a lot.
Yeah.
That wasn't helpful.
That meant you were going to be a comic because.
And I was going to be dramatic.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So when did you like start stand up then? What was your first set?
Boston. I was 19 years old, bussing tables for a living. By the way, that is the job that I am most qualified for. I was a really good table busser, mm-hmm. like a change your life table busser. Like, you know, among comics, I bet you. And I don't know all the comics anymore, but
there's too many. That would be impossible.
Yeah. I'll bet you I'm somewhere in the top 200, I would guess.
Definitely.
It's just a guess.
Yeah. Yes. Very modest.
But among table bussers, I would put myself in the top 10.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Now, are you still, like, when you go out to eat, are you someone that busses for the busser? Like, do you get your shit all stacked nice and...
No,
okay.
No.
You've done your time.
I have separately tipped bussers before.
That's
and
nice.
And certainly I acknowledge them, mm-hmm. but I've even written them notes before. I have had the experience where something spills and I jump up right yeah. away mm-hmm. And start to clean it.
Yeah.
I was a good table busser. When I left, they had to hire like 3 people.
So you're busting tables. Like, what made you decide to do that first set?
Well, I had fantasies of, we had like street performers in Boston, like in the Boston Common that I had seen, you know, before. And I was under the impression that they just went out there one day and started talking.
Right.
You know, there were jugglers and mimes and things like that, too. Not lots and lots of them, but some of them. And I had seen this. And so I really thought, OK, that's what I'm going to do. It didn't occur to me that I would have anything prepared to do it, by the way. I just thought that I would one day go to the Boston Commons and start talking to strangers.
As someone who lived by the Boston Commons, like that's still happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was never much of a planner. And then, so that was really what I thought I was going to do. And then during the period where I was getting up my courage to do that, and I never did get up my courage to do that, but during that same time, I happen to have gone with the manager of a restaurant that I bust tables at. She had a friend who played in a band, and they were playing at a place called the Inman Square Saloon, or the Springfield Street Saloon, maybe, which became the Ding Ho, but which was a well-known comedy club back then in Boston. A lot of guys lay claim to that being their training ground. And while we were there seeing the band, there was a flyer up on the wall that said that every other Sunday there was a comedy show, a stand-up comedy show there, produced by the Comedy Connection. And, it was only recently that I talked to one of the guys. There were two men that started this company called the Comedy Connection. And not like literally within the last 2 years, I was reunited over the phone with one of them. And I asked him, gee, how did you guys start doing that to begin with? And basically they decided that seemed like a fun idea. And so I think they ran an ad in the paper or in the classifieds or something asking, you know, if people who thought they were funny or whatever could come do this thing. And because the guys that I saw, and some of them are still working, but the guys that I saw when I went to one of those shows were terrible. Because they had no, because they had very little experience behind what they were doing. So instead of, you know, now if somebody asks you, well, how do you become a comic? So, well, you do open mic nights. That's how you do it. That's like college that's how you learn. But these guys didn't have that background. They just started. There was no open mic night. There were just these shows. And so some of them were really, really bad. And the same for me. I hung around. I let the Comedy Connection guys know that I would like to do this. And the first time I ever did a show, it wasn't an open mic night. It was a show, as if I'd been around forever. Wow. And, but they would introduce you saying it was your first time when it was your first time, which is why your second time sucks so badly.
Yeah, because everyone's really nice your first time.
But you're already addicted.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And the second time they pretend that, you're a seasoned, you're an iron skillet. And you go on, and the fall from grace is so rapid and so hard. And then you're just crawling out of that for the next, I don't know how many sets.
I mean, part of my, when people ask me how to get into stand up, I do say go to open mics and watch, because people aren't good at it.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like, I can do this. Like, you're going to see a lot of people who aren't good, and you're going to think, I'm at least as good as this, so I can try it myself.
You know what? I found watching people that were bad was a lot more instructive than watching people that were good.
Yeah.
Because people who are good, if they're really good, you almost can't see what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when they're bad, you go, boy, I saw that, right? Mm-hmm. It's like drawing something where you're from the outside, where you never fill in, like if you're drawing a picture of a person, you're just filling in the stuff on the outside, and then you find the frame of the person. It's like backwards art.
Right.
Because when I saw what I didn't want to do, I avoided some pitfalls. and it sort of helped me craft a little bit what I did want to do.
Do you remember any of those early things that you saw that you knew that you didn't want to do?
Mm-hmm. I do. People saying to the audience that they're having a bad time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, telling the audience that the audience isn't
Thank
good
enough. Thank you. When a host says that, especially, yes, it drives me up a fucking wall. Way to drive the energy and everybody's confidence in the show just right into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, my high school math teacher remains a close friend of mine, and she has grandchildren now. And And by the way, she married my high school biology teacher. Aww. So it was an interdepartmental marriage, and it's very full of love and math and biology.
Love and math.
But she has grandchildren now, and she sent me a video one day of her granddaughter, who's five. And she sent it like with kind of a, you know, jokingly saying in the email, do you think she has a future? But apparently this five-year-old granddaughter has somewhere discovered the idea of stand-up comedy. I don't know, to watching TV. I don't know. Or somebody showed it to, I don't know. But what I was struck by in this little video, so she's the little girl, the little five-year-old girl, has her grandparents sitting like they're the audience. Mm-hmm. And they were very responsive, by the way. And the girl's just telling jokes, right? Jokes that you would read in like a kid joke book. And they, so her grandparents would laugh, and then the girl would go, oh, come on. She'd go like that, you know, that's all that gets. And I was like, wow. I mean, how did she stumble upon that technique, which is so flawed and so awful? It kind of made me a little bit sad. I felt like, ew, that's what kids take away, like right. when they see, like, yeah. So I mean, whatever she had seen had to have been either like a send-up of a stand-up comic, like, I don't know, I've never seen The Simpsons, but maybe it was on some.
It might have been making fun of
that. Yeah.
Right. It might have been some sort of sarcastic portrayal of a comic. Yeah. But yeah, I've always loathed that, both as an audience member, as a person waiting to go on, mm-hmm. And as a performer. Why would I want to tell people who came to see me that they're inadequate?
Yeah.
1,000%. And yeah, and it would be like going to a party and walking up to every single person you meet, like, this blows a dick, right? Sucks that we're here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then go to the person who's
and be like, I've never heard that expression, blows a dick. And if
you're welcome.
Am I correct that in the right hands, that would be considered a compliment?
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess in the right mouth, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If a guy heard this blows a dick, wouldn't you just perk up and go, well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I never heard that expression. I'm going to start using it. I'll tell you that.
Oh, what? Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Blows a dick. Wow. Yeah.
I'm glad we could get that to you, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah. I feel like, was it Ariel who sang A Whole New World?
Yes.
Because.
Yes.
That's where I feel like I'm standing on the precipice of a whole new world. Like, I don't remember vocabulary words very well, even though I have an ongoing, I have a podcast. It's called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And one of the things that we've been doing it for about, I don't know, 4 years or so. And for the majority of that 4 years, I have a little segment where I do a vocabulary word. And the sort of running joke, and it's not a joke, really. It's just a fact that happens to be sort of funny, which is that none of us can remember any of the words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, I don't know. It just takes up time, I guess, because we really don't. We, of all the words that we've done, mm-hmm. and I used to do a thing where I would do a song each week, and the song had four of the vocabulary words in it. And then the following week, the last one of the four would get knocked off the song and the new one would get added on, which means that every word that we did was on for 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. That, you know, for the, you know, because repetition and all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still, you know, I think there's like four voices on our show and none of us can remember more than about two of the words.
That's the law of podcasting. For us, as soon as you say it, it leaves your brain. I don't remember anything I've said on here. We've done this for 10 years.
Yeah.
Wow. But I think blows a dick is going to stay with
me. I think it is too. Yeah. Because there's a visual, there's an action. We've got a nice K at the end. And Paula, I'd like to know that I added that to your vernacular is something that I may get brought up to the stage.
Yeah.
One time I was, one of the things that was really helpful to me was hosting open mic nights.
Oh,
yes,
shit. 100%.
Because
you learn
you learn a tremendous amount. I got hired frequently at a place called The Other Cafe in San Francisco, which was my favorite club ever. It was only there for 6 years. But the guys who ran it would invite me to host their open mic night, not every week, but many weeks. And it was, this is like when I only had like 5 minutes of material. And so you used everything in the room. Mm-hmm. You used the people in the room, right? It was really a great playground and a great kind of training ground.
Yeah.
And, but you know, you're saying the same thing over and over again, because back in those days, this is the early 80s, there was a ton of people that wanted to go on. And by the way, the clubs were full. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that shit where you had to bring somebody with you or you had to pay to go on or any of that crap. The audiences were loving the resurgence of stand-up comedy in San Francisco and in Boston and in a bunch of different cities around the country. But I worked out of Boston and San Francisco. And so there were some really hot crowds.
Yeah.
And everybody was anxious to get on in front of that hot crowd. So, you know, you're doing, please welcome, you're really going to like him. This next guy, and they would want to give you this list of shit to introduce them with.
Like,
and
it's no one cares,
right? Just go. You're only as good as how you do now. Okay.
Yeah.
So, one night, it was actually someplace else that I was emceeing, but nonetheless, I was emceeing an open mic night and this long list of open micers, and none of them were new. They were, they were usual suspects. And because guys that were working would still come do open mic night.
Yeah.
But anyways, so I had done so many of, you're really going to like them, please welcome. You're really going to like them, please welcome. So just because I had repeated it so many times, I just thought it would be funny to say, this next guy is awful. You're just going to fucking hate him. And I chose who I did it with.
Of course.
I mean, I did it with a guy that was, that was competent.
Yeah, I could take the joke.
Yeah, you knew he could.
Right, exactly.
Misdirect, yeah.
He ate it so well. Yeah, it was awful. He's never forgiven me. And it was terrible because it turned out he really wasn't very good, but I guess I didn't think that.
Yeah.
I thought that he was.
Right.
And so there was but in fact, when he started off and he was just awful, the crowd was like, well, she was not kidding.
Oh, no.
She's right.
Yeah.
We had a friend, we were talking with recently about like a booker in LA who still does those bringer shows, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But she was talking about how she was on stage once during her set and the booker emailed her saying she hadn't brought enough people.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
And so she couldn't go on?
I don't know. Like, I think she was, I don't know what happened at that point, but I was just like dying laughing that she was emailing her
just
while she
to shame
was on
her,
stage.
I think. Like, we should,
I think just to shame her and be like,
put you on. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Wow.
I mean, the power trip.
I could not have been a comic under those circumstances.
Yeah.
Because
I didn't do them. I refuse.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Yeah, I feel like you can go around them.
I don't have friends.
Do you not have friends?
No. Mrs. Bump. Come on.
Mrs. Bump will be there.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's funny? When I first started out in Boston, I became reacquainted with my eighth grade English teacher, Mrs. Forbes. And Mrs. Forbes was an eighth grade English teacher. Yeah. she had her hair set like she was of that generation that they had their hair set. Mm-hmm. She wore not high heels, but heels, like a couple inch heels every day. She wore dresses. She was not flamboyant in terms of her dress, mm-hmm. it, you, you, you know, But, you know, she wore like, you know, tapered skirts, stockings. Mm-hmm. we thought she was old then. She wasn't, but we thought she was.
Right.
And she was a terrific English teacher. But I became reacquainted with her for, I can't even remember what reason, mm-hmm. once I started doing stand-up. And I was living in Boston, and she came to see me a couple of times. And I remember she'd come once, and then she was going to come again. And I, you know, and you'd be in these weird places, you know, she'd go, "Oh, where can I see you?" And I would say, "Well, you know, I'm going to be at, you know, Bernie's Bar and Grill."
Yeah.
you know, like these horrible places that weren't like show.
You don't want to alarm the people that like you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we used to have shit like paper dolls and stuff when I was growing up. Like, and one of the jokes that you might do with your paper doll is that you'd cut the paper doll out from it's a sort of a coloring book looking book, mm-hmm. And there would be these backgrounds, right? Maybe a jungle or a restaurant or, I don't know, a coal mine, or probably not a coal mine, come to think of it, but or classroom. Mrs. Forbes coming to my shows was like taking a paper doll. And so like a great joke you would do with your friends is put the paper doll in a place where it didn't belong.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so one of the great jokes, you know, right. So Mrs. Forbes coming to my show is she just didn't belong there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
One time she wanted to know, and I only would have like a handful of dates ever. Mm-hmm. So there weren't a lot to choose from. I couldn't go, "Well, wait till I'm in the good place," right. because I wasn't going to be in a good place. So, one time I told her about a show that I was doing on St. Patrick's Day. I never thought it through.
Oh, no.
And neither did Mrs. Forbes.
Oh, no.
That it was Boston.
Oh, my God.
You shouldn't even go outside.
So the it was drunks.
Yeah.
It was not, you know, the comics were drunk. Not me, but the others. comics were drunk. The audience was drunk. There weren't all that many. It wasn't like a huge audience. Anyway, mm-hmm. it wasn't even a place with a stage, I don't think. I think they just had the person standing in front of the bar with a microphone.
Yeah.
It was awful. And Mrs. Forbes, who was the type of woman that when she sat, she folded her hands on her lap and her legs were crossed at the calves, right?
Yeah.
She was that generation. Mm-hmm. And I was just deeply humiliated that she was there. And after the and of course I did terrible. I mean, if there had been an email at that time, she might have been emailing me that I didn't bring enough people. But she, you know, I came off and I said, "Oh my God, I'm so sorry." And she was like, "I thought you were wonderful."
Aww.
You know, she was like, I forget why I'm telling you that, other than just
she
like how horrible.
She probably could tell you were still great. It was just the environment, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was. No, I think she was traumatized. I mean, I think she was. I lost track of her there for a while, and I'm pretty sure it was that.
She's like, "Well, we'll just see how Paula turns out."
Yeah. I think she was surprised to find I was still doing it years later.
Yeah. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Lady to Lady, and we are back with our guest, Paula Poundstone. We're going to do, we have a section where we give advice to people. Do you want to help us give advice to someone?
Do I ever?
Oh, yeah.
Because you can tell from the background that I've sketched of myself that if I'm full of one thing, it's advice for other people. You don't build a success story like mine without, you know, knowing the ins and outs of life, without knowing some hacks, if you know what I mean. If you know what? Let me just... All right. I know that it audio, not video, but for you guys, look, I got a foosball table.
Yeah.
I got.
Is that a drum set?
A drum set?
I got that cat tree that's all shredded. Oh. You don't get shit like that if you don't know what you're doing.
Frankly, you're living the dream.
You don't get 10 cats if you don't know what you're doing. Let's start there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They only give them to you if you're skilled at life.
I think that's the rule.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to answer. It's a you have to answer a rigid questionnaire.
They do have to come to your house and make sure that you have a foosball table and a cat tree before
they give
them.
You can't get 10 cats without a foosball table.
No.
What, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Okay, well, this is about social media, this problem. So I know so we'll see what you have to say, but I'll read it. It's written in. So here we go. Ladies, here's my lady problem. One of my closest friends battles with severe depression and anxiety. We met a decade ago.
Oh,
both
fuck, she's outing me.
So sorry.
This is going to be so awkward.
This is from Miss Bump,
this
actually.
This is an intervention. Yeah,
the subject was, I'm still alive.
Yes.
Okay. I met my friend working a decade ago in a restaurant, and we really bonded and have been close since then. She's always struggled with this since I've known her, and like any mental health issue, sometimes it's better than others. One thing that I know really affects her negatively is social media. She seems to take things really personally, and it seems like seeing other people's lives when she's not feeling great about her own really triggers a lot of depressed and angry feelings for her. The problem is she will not put it down. I personally pulled back a bit from social media and felt it really helped my mental health, and I know it would be really good for her. I've tried to casually mention this because, you know, we're all adults and we don't want to be told what to do, but she won't put it down. I get the sense that it's what she does when she wakes up and goes to sleep. She just scrolls and gets upset, feels left out or not enough, and all that triggering stuff that comes with it. So I'm kind of frustrated with her for not really making an effort to cut it out of her life more. I think in her mind she needs it, but she really doesn't, especially when it's so obviously detrimental to her state of mind. It's tough because I love her, but when she isn't helping herself out of these dips, it can be hard to see a light at the end of the tunnel for her. Do you have any advice about talking to her about something like this, or any tips on how to ease back on using social media?
First of all, write back to her and say, I'm trying, you asshole. My son was an electronics addict.
Oh, really?
And before people understood that that was possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was like patient X. and it was awful. Mm-hmm. Awful. Yeah. I put him in front of a computer when he was 3 because I thought I was giving him some sort of academic leg up.
Yeah.
And it was really one of the most detrimental things that ever happened to him.
Did he become addicted to like games and stuff? Or
yes.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Okay. But you know, just any kind of electronics, you know, he literally could never sit in the front seat of my car because he couldn't keep his hands off the buttons and the GPS screen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I ended up in France once when I was trying to drive to Oxnard because he kept fucking with the thing. But you know, it's addiction like any other. And it's funny because I fall prey to it and I know better.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all do.
People who design this shit are addicted to it.
Yeah. Absolutely. And some of them, like, you know, like the guy who made the nuclear weapon, some of them recognize what they did now.
Yes.
And there are, there's a handful of people that have come forward and said, oh, sorry. but yes, they purposely made these things addictive. They work with psychologists and experts on the brain literally to help them design more addictive apps and device, you know. So it is a real addiction, just like any other.
Yep.
And therefore, the likelihood of talking her friend out of it is pretty slim. I think that one could offer alternative experiences, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I find just walking is like so good for my
same.
Yeah, for my mental health. And I'm forced to walk because of the big dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if it was just me by myself, I'm not as likely to do it. But, you know, my goal from the time I get up in the morning is to tire my dogs out. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that means I'm really enjoying them.
But it does. It makes you get up and out. And I think like, yeah, I don't. If I take my phone, which I usually don't on walks, I try not to. I don't look at it. You know, it's like I'm out there, I'm out there in the world, like letting my brain do its own thing.
Because I think
that is
the other
important
thing is, and she might want to try this, which is, I honestly have very few friends, and so hardly anybody contacts me. So that really cuts down on my social media use. No one like writes witticisms back and forth with me or anything like that.
Oh, you're inviting a lot of replies now, Paula.
It's made my life, you know, better.
Yeah.
No, I mean, but it really is. And, you know, I think we've all had that experience where there used to be a guy in San Francisco, a comic that was, he didn't seem to believe that he should have to have a day job. And this is when we all had day jobs.
We know people.
And he didn't think that he should. He thought it was somehow beneath him. He was really screwed up mentally. But so he was always borrowing money from everybody. And none of us had money. We all had day jobs. And we all wanted to be comics professionally. Mm-hmm. And some of us got to the place where you could dump the day job. But now you're really strapped for cash, right? Because you may, you know, what, we make like 10 bucks a night or something. Yeah. Telling our little jokes. And this guy was always hitting us up. And he was so screwed up in so many ways. But the things that you could tell him were so like, get a job, right? They were so, it was so easy to spot.
Yeah.
Right. That's very straightforward.
I don't think there was one person in our group that didn't at one time or another come out of a room from talking with this guy and feel like, okay, fixed him.
Yeah.
Of course.
Because the advice was not subtle. Yeah. It wasn't hard to ferret out. It was get a job. Don't borrow any more money. Stop drinking. Right?
Concrete.
I think he was, but it never worked because those things don't.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's similar to like not liking someone's partner. Like you can't really say there's nothing you can do until they figure it out.
Yeah. Everyone has their own rock bottoms of certain kinds.
So you're not supposed to say anything?
Do you say something when you don't like someone's partner?
I mean, you can. I just don't think it works often, you know?
Yeah. I'll ask like questions to be like, I'm giving you a very open door if you would like to start a conversation. That tends to be what I do.
One of my best friends was with a guy that I just thought was gross, and I managed to keep my mouth shut, which is not something I usually am good at, and they ended up breaking up, and I was like, oh my god, am I glad I never said anything. You know, because,
But then you missed out on saying I was right.
Well, so what I did was I said, I never told you this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what? Life is not a competition, but if it was, I got a point for that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. In one of my notebooks, there's just a little check mark. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, for the social media stuff, it is hard because, you can't really, and it's so ever-present in their thing. It's not like, of course, you can say like, hey, let's go do something, but you can't tell them to not be on their phone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they're going to bring the phone anyway and to the activity.
Right, yeah, and you're not like their parent.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I have an idea. She could invite her friend camping. Mm-hmm. And
there we go.
Okay, and don't say that she can't bring the phone, but there's nowhere to charge it. After like a day, you know, her friend will be like crawling up the sides of the nylon tent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to detox. Yeah. I think you bring them to a place where there's no reception.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't even have to wait, and then the phone dies. Yeah.
And then you do, like, we need a waiting period until they get it out of their system. Well,
and it's good to bring a patch.
Yes.
To help with the withdrawal, just a patch. Yeah.
Just a little patch of people being success, photos of people being successful.
Yeah, people who are like, things you don't want to see. Tanner than you, smoothies you can't afford. Yeah.
Yes.
I used to always say to my kids, you know, because they, if sometimes they were feeling, they'd be like, oh, I'm the worst, blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, wouldn't that be great? Because, you know, you'd stand out. Because you're the very worst. Mm-hmm. Then people would know you because you were the very. I go, but you're not that lucky.
Yeah.
Honestly, you're in the middle somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. You're not the best and you're not the worst. You're somewhere in the middle. You know, you can. I don't know. I guess you can work to move up. I suppose.
Yeah. Like, or down.
You're somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And join the fucking club.
Yeah. Most of us are in the middle for most things, you know, and the middle's a great place.
Except on a plane.
Well, yes.
God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I know. Yeah. I at least like, because I think social media can be such a trap of just like the what you don't have that like I've gone through periods where like, number one, I find that you do need to detox from it. But like once I've deleted social media off my phone for a few days, I stop checking it and it's nicer. I also will have different things on my phone that I want to do instead. Like I have Duolingo. I have like, you know,
things like that
I want to do instead. If I just want to have my phone out. I also like have done times in when things have been like hard mentally, I do gratitude lists where like I'll start every morning and be like, what are 10 things that I'm grateful for right now to try to like get your head in the headspace of like, there are good things in my life. So then if you do pull out the phone and you see all this stuff that you wish you had, you're like, well, but I do have this. And like, this is, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's the same as like with a host. It's practicing. It's like, you don't want to say, hey, this audience is bad. Like you just going to social media is you saying, hey, my life is bad. You know?
Where are you seeing? Is it Facebook? Where are people posting how great their life is?
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok.
TikTok.
Everywhere.
Yeah. I never everywhere. See stuff like
oh,
that.
Yeah. On Instagram? Yeah.
Where people are saying my life well, is Instagram- great.
Well, I don't think it's not necessarily that, but it's people posting, you know, a lot of people are posting big moments in their life. Mm-hmm. And in comparison, you can feel like, oh my God, they have the job that I want. They have
or
this that I want.
Or it's a party you're not
stuff
at.
Like that.
Or it's like a hot celebrity that is totally made up with a makeup artist that is totally unattainable for somebody to have in their everyday life. So it's like images of beauty and perfection and it's a way.
It's people, the highlight reel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what I'm finding on Twitter recently? And I, you know, I don't know what Elon Musk has done to my Twitter.
Oh,
it's a nightmare.
It's been at this, when he first took over, the amount of followers that I had dropped precipitously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it went back up to where it was. And it hasn't budged. And yet I'll see on the feed, it'll say so-and-so followed you, so-and-so followed you, this part, right? So it doesn't make sense to me that it hasn't budged. But I stopped caring really a while ago because I'm like, well, I don't think that number means anything. And, I for whatever goofy, stupid reason, I enjoy thinking of shit and writing it and posting it. And that's that. But the people that I follow, when I first got a Twitter account, my manager started it for me. And somebody told her that the way you get followers is to follow other people. Ah. So she would literally just sit with the computer following people. And she would explain it to me, but I never understood it. But she would say like, oh, I'd go to the Starbucks page and just follow people that were on the I have no idea why. But therefore, although I have added in people that I follow very intentionally, there were literally thousands of people that I don't know. I'll read things that people post that are the opposite of my views politically. Mm-hmm. And I never get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm interested to know, right? But even like the people that I follow, they don't appear to all be there anymore.
No, it's maybe never, they went it's someplace. Not like people you follow too. It's yeah. like an out, it's they're showing you people who aren't in
it's
your feed.
It's become like it's a Halloween
it's,
warehouse.
It's very confusing. Yeah. But recently, what I notice is, again, these are strangers. These are not people that I know. But when I notice like a real bump in this kind of post, which is my husband just died and I'm heartbroken. And I think to myself, and sometimes they literally say like an hour ago.
Oh my God.
Or, you know, and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you tweeting?
You do see yeah. that shit. Yeah. Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Mine shows me just violent fights. That's what's in my Twitter algorithm these days. Super
see,
fun.
We're all seeing different things because mine found out that I have that I like Real Housewives. So I only see housewife stuff.
I mean, oh, I must have watched yeah. one video of a fight and now literally, and I'm like, cool, this is not yeah. what
but
I
this
want.
This is why we're devolving into absolute chaos as a species. Like we are going to have less and less of the same reality as time moves forward. Like we're none mm-hmm. of us.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
With
we all have
media.
Different bubbles.
We all have different bubbles. And when you spend too much time on there, you are living in a reality that exists for nobody else. That like yeah. was mm-hmm. just illustrated by our different feeds.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The other thing I get is a lot of dead pets.
Oh.
A lot of people yeah. posting pictures of their pets and saying it was my best friend.
Yeah.
You know, and now.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. And I used to respond. I used to write and go, oh, I'm so sorry. And then after a while, I'm like, well, for Christ's sakes. You know.
It's too sad.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. When you get a pet, unless you get a tortoise or an exotic bird. Yeah. You're going to bury that pet.
Yeah.
Or you're going to, you know, that pet's going to die. And that's part of the circle of life. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying this right in front of Theo.
Theo!
You're not going to live forever.
Theo's like, little does Paula know, I.
A cat would.
And by the way,
yeah.
and they are going to suck the money out of you in their last few months of yeah, life.
Yes.
Because that's what you took on.
Yeah.
Yes. I know, but I'm still posting about it.
Yeah. We're still human.
I was at a vet one time with my cat, Smike, and Smike had an eye problem of some sort, and I was sent to like a specialist. And we're sitting in the waiting room, and you know, she was in her carrier, and we're sitting in the waiting room, and the vet comes out, talking to the person sitting beside me, I swear I'm not making this up, about their, I think it was a dog getting contact lenses.
Oh my God.
And I turned to my cat. I said, you are not fucking getting contact lenses.
Oh my gosh.
How the hell do you put contacts on a dog?
I said to my cat, I said, you can have a seeing eye dog, but you are not.
I think a monocle. I think a monocle for the cat would be appropriate.
Yes, that's the move. And
well, that, sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, and that is, now that we've all talked about it, maybe that can be our new algorithm. Just cats with monocles.
I would love
cats
that.
And monocles. That's what I'm putting out there for us.
Yes.
That's what I'm going to see in my Twitter feed.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get a lot of that. How do you guys not step on one another when you talk? Like we, on my podcast, we're forever bumping into each other. Not intentionally, but there's a delay. Mm-hmm. And so we're forever tripping over one another. And I notice you guys don't do that. Why?
It happens sometimes, but also I think just because we've had the show for 10 years, we kind of just can, we almost like
we just kind of know
finish each other's thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're basically like one person in a three-person shirt. We're just kind of operating.
Yeah. We physically did have a three-person shirt for a sketch at one point. So what I would suggest is maybe to get a four-person shirt for you and your co-hosts.
Yeah. Yes.
Walk around in it for a day. And that might be the team building exercise that you guys need.
When I was in the School for Fucked Up Kids.
By the way, every time you say that, I see like a fancy sign on a lawn that says School for Fucked Up Kids.
See, I see a bumper sticker that says honor yeah. student at the School for Fucked Up Kids.
Yeah, we had a hell of a football team.
The crowbars, yeah.
One time they made us do this stupid thing where we had to choose a partner, and I chose my best friend, Steve. Uh-huh. And one of us, the partners, we had to take turns being blindfolded and having the, you know, your sighted partner walk you around and, you know, keep you safe. It was some sort of trust building thing. Now, I think Steve and I trusted one another just fine. I think we had a lot of trust in our relationship. But when he was blindfolded, I remember we were going up these outside wooden stairs, and my friend Martha was leaving. And when I saw her leaving, I turned to wave, and I, you know, I walked Steve right into a pole. I don't really think it had anything to do with trust or not trust. Yeah. It's just, you know, no matter how much I trust him, I'm not staring at him all the time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think it was helpful. But I think you guys are telling me that you could do the trust walk.
We could.
The blindfolded trust walk, because you all know one another so well. You know.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
We're doing that. Okay, we're doing this on
we're going to do a 24-hour live stream. We got to do this.
Yeah.
Paula, before we go, I just need to tell you, like, it's been so awesome talking to you. Like, you're the first person I ever saw doing stand-up as a kid. Like, I have a very distinct memory of watching your HBO special and being like, oh, you can do that? And so it's very awesome and cool talking to you. And, like, very, very
turns
cool.
out.
Well, I'm very flattered.
You are someone else's Judy Garland already.
Yeah, like I really like, and honestly, it's kind of trippy seeing you in front of Lucy, because like as I got older, people would say shit like, "Oh, are women funny?" But like, it never even occurred to me that that would be a question, because I grew up watching you and Lucy. Like, a fucking
You know what? Like, Jerry Lewis. In his less, I mean, I don't know. They say he was very, very beloved in France. And maybe he was, but when he was no longer making, you know, funny Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis, you know, right? When he was not in the public eye the way that he had once been, he started saying shit like, oh, women aren't funny. It was just to be controversial. Right. It was just to get attention.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. You know, how could you take, you know, the greater half of the population? And I mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
It's just
like,
dumb.
Men eat, I don't know. What the fuck are you?
Exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Let's start that rumor. Men cannot eat soup.
I used to say to people, I go, unless you have to tell jokes while bending over and leaning, bending at a right angle at the waist and leaning your head on a wall and picking up a chair. Then there's no difference between a man and a woman telling jokes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, you're incredible. We're so honored to chat with you and have you on the show.
Well, this was really fun. Thank you. And now I am going to get the 4-person shirt so that my partners and I don't talk over each other.
And it's a write-off, you know?
Yeah.
And then the 10-person shirt for the cats, and then we just go from there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Imagine.
Wouldn't it be great to just take the whole family out in one shirt?
I mean,
oh my
a dream,
God,
honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
The 2 dogs in the front pulling everybody else behind.
Yeah. You know, we have to stay together. We're all in the same shirt.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it a lot. I like what it says. Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Paula.
It was really fun. Yeah.
Thank you. Go check out Paula's website for all of her dates coming to a town near you at paulapoundstone.com. She obviously so hilarious and so fun to watch. And thank you so much for hanging out with us. It's been so fun.
Thank you. And the other thing is, if you don't like me, you're going to want to know when I'm in town.
Yeah, where to avoid.
Find out where not to go.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
All right, you guys. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Bye, Paula. Bye.
3, 2, 3, 6 but 30.
It's 6 but 30 somewhere.
Hi, ladies. Okay, to the incredible craft woman who called in with the lady problem in the most recent episode about how to get her name out there and kind of jumpstart her craft business. I'm not sure like what area you live in or if there are a lot of farmers markets or local vending opportunities where there's like a craft fair or like a market of some kind. But in my experience, I feel like being able to set up a booth there is an excellent opportunity to get your name out there in your community, because you have a captive audience of people who come to those kinds of events looking for exactly what you're selling. And so I would just recommend, on top of everything with socials and everything else that the ladies recommended, to, yeah, see if there are any local events where you could vend your pieces. Best of luck. I hope that it goes incredibly well. You're going to do great. Thank you. Love you, ladies. Bye.
Hi, ladies. Longtime listener and frequent caller at this point. We're pretty much best friends now. Anyways, I was just listening to Barbara's telling of her gift card flipbook and how she just, like, stores gift cards. And I just want to say, you know, Social Security is going to crash, and none of us, you know, in our generation are going to get that shit. So save those gift cards, girl, and use them when you're old, and you will eat like a queen. Also, I would definitely listen to a investigative podcast about you finding Michael and Sarah, the givers of the gift card. Anywho, toodles.
Lady to Lady is produced by Katie Levine.
Get tons of bonus content, discounted tickets for live shows, and lots more at patreon.com/ladytolady.
Follow us on Instagram at @lady2ladycomedy and give your input on lady problems and get info about upcoming live shows.
And hey, don't forget to follow our individual accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Babs Gray, Brandazzle, and Testify Barker. Follow Lady to Lady on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen so you don't miss an episode.
If you like what you hear, you can rate and review the show.
Visit exactlyrightstore.com to purchase Lady to Lady merch.